Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network. The music
scene has got me down. Oh, shit.
Those solid rhythms. That famous makes you want to twist.
You cannot be saved.
Follow me.
Stage is on fire.
Rock is a weapon.
Welcome to the Ugly Radio. Tonight's episode, I'm Coming Home.
Don't look up. Keep your head low. Don't breathe too deep. What's your name, kid?
Tiny?
Timmy.
I hate it here. It smells like wet things dying.
A Sleevel home for unwanted children is 2 miles downwind of the tin pig in a can factory.
Oh.
And during the summer, it smells like gristle for 5 miles on every side. During the winter, it's too cold for smelling.
I was at the Timken Orphanage, but that set on fire and flooded when the fish fat confectionery exploded in May.
The Sleevels are nasty. Mr. Sleevel has a face like a manatee, wide and wet. He eats 4 puddings a day, smacks his lips, and sucks his teeth. Mr. Sleevel owns Sleevel Rat and Roach Collections Incorporated, you know. We work from 6 to 5, rat catching and cockroach crushing in people's crawl spaces and under the sewer lines. Rats are fast, though, and smart, and they'll rip your lips if you aren't smarter and faster, and roaches will swarm.
I lost my eye and some of my neck in a roach swarm. Lots of kids were maimed and crippled and rat-scarred.
Mr. Sleevel, he just wants his bag of dead rats.
He gets 2 coppers a bag for rats and 3 silvers a pound for smashed roaches from the civic municipality. He's rolling in rat riches, Mr. Sleevel is.
Mrs. Sleevel... ain't any better. She looks like a walrus, all tusk and blubber. She feeds us 1/2 bowl of cold porridge at dawn and thumps us in the ear if we don't swallow it all down with a smile.
All of it. The lumpy wetness and all the greasy bits. Bits of mouse mouth and spider fang. Whatever is in the porridge is not porridge.
But the worst, the most horrible thing here at the Sleevel Home for Unwanted Children... is Randolph Sleevel. Mr. and Mrs. Sleevel's terrible, awful son.
I'm Randolph. I've got a teddy bear 20 feet tall.
In May, he turned 10 and had a party with a pony and a sugar cake that looked like a cannon. He punched the pony, smashed in the throat, and ate all the cannon cake. All sparkly 7 layers of chocolate and plum jam and candied oranges until he was sick on his shiny shoes.
I wonder what cake tastes like.
Do ponies smell like hay and outdoors and spring?
I don't know. I smelled a squirrel once. It smelled like a trash can.
Randolph kicks the littlest kids at chore time when he goes to play picket with his nanny or ride his steam-powered bicycle. So watch out.
Randolph pins down the crippled kids. The kids with the withered arms, the kids with no feet. He pins them down, pinches and twists. Pinch and twist.
Bruises make him laugh.
Bruises make me laugh.
He gave me a bag of sweets one time, but it wasn't. It was a bag of clicking black beetles.
Randolph Sleevel is the rottenest thing in this rat's nest.
Lights out, you smelly orphans!
When I get big enough, I'm running away from the Sleevel home for unwanted children, joining a gang of thieves and criminals and outlaws. I've got little fingers and I'm quick. I can snatch valuables easy. I'll live like a king when I get big. I'll be alright thieving and murdering. I'll be fine. With the others I worry about. Especially at Christmas time.
Christmas time! At the Timken Orphanage, before it blew up and flooded from the fish fat, we got a chocolate tiger and a rubber ball.
Christmas time at the Sleevel Home for Unwanted Children is just another wet day.
We can see the Sleevels eating their goose and their glazed ham and their whipped mince pies through the windows.
Last year, we watched Randolph Sleevel open 97 presents wrapped in gold paper foil. Santa Claus doesn't leave anything here under our cold chimney.
Last year on Christmas Eve, I waited until the moon is high and I snuck out of the Sleevel home for unwanted children through the cellar, past the groaning spidery trees, and I pocketed some small things for the littlest kids. A wind-up rabbit, a stuffed cat, and a tin train that spins. Randolph Sleevel didn't know. He's got so many things. He's got so many things, and we've got nothing. Then, on Christmas morning, the smallest, the weakest, the saddest kids, they got something from Santa Claus, so they don't curl up themselves and die and have lost hope and loneliness and black despair.
Oh.
So sleep tight, Tiny. Tomorrow's Christmas. It's a cold day here, but I'll steal you something warm.
Ho, ho, ho. I have a letter here.
Oh. Your teeth are sharp and yellow.
Who wrote me a letter?
I wrote it, mister.
Read it.
Dear Santa Claus, everybody says you won't come here because no one cares about us orphans and cripples and useless rat catchers. But I'm writing, Mr. Santa, because it's bad here. I don't mind not having all my eyes and getting swarmed by cockroaches. I don't mind eating gruel and sleeping under damp covers in a spidery corner, but I mind Randolph Sleevel. I mind him a lot. He shoves me in the mop closet on Sundays and locks the door. He knows that there are brown, creeping creatures that live in those walls, and they slither in the dark, biting my naked kneecaps and leaving welts. He spits in my shoes when no one's looking. He laughs at my empty eye socket and trips me in the hallways. He's very, very bad, Mr. Santa. Mr. Santa, this Christmas, I don't want any toys. I don't need any sweets. I just want Randolph Sleevel to get what he deserves. Yours respectfully, Misty Marpover, Orphan.
Yes. I got your letter. Let's open the sack.
What's going on?
Dasher? Dancer? Vixen? My reindeer are always hungry. Merry Christmas, Misty Marpover.
Thank you, Santa Claus.
You, little thief, you're a good elf. Climb on my reindeer and I'll take you away. You work for me now. You're in my gang.
Really?
Get on. Get on my sleek reindeer and we'll rise high, high above the chimneys and slate roofs and smoke stacks high into the blue black night.
And I'll ride across the clouds following you, following Santa and his thieving, murderous gang. Thank you, Santa. Thank you.
Oh! Oh! Oh!
Thank you.
Life in the Yellow House. Written by A.V. Eichenbaum.
I sat in my favorite spot on the old brick porch, strumming the same guitar I'd strummed for a decade. I was 19. The witches down the road say this sun's gonna last at least another month. Nadia tossed her dark, curly hair behind her. It doesn't feel right. She handed me the bottle of wine. 75 degrees in the middle of February. Drought weather. I stubbed out my clove and tossed it in the coffee can we all used as an ashtray. It was nearly full. Mostly my fault. I was 19. That one witch, man, said Nadia. She knows what she's talking about. She talks to the ghosts around here, I think. Marie? I set my guitar down. Yeah, her. She's different somehow. From the rest of them, I mean. The coven. We're all a little different here. A crooked smile made its way across my face. Nadia just shrugged and looked out into the woods that surrounded our slice of nowhere. The yellow house sat in the hills just down from the Santa Cruz Mountains. In a lot of ways, it was a lot like other places around. Faded yellow paint, three stories, ancient, college kids, grad students, dropouts, anarchists, and misfits all finding their way to one big house in the middle of nowhere where the rent wasn't too high and there wasn't any air conditioning. Can't remember where I saw the ad, though. We had rats. Endangered rats. Kangaroo rats. And they were cute, except for when they rattled through the walls at night, long tails whipping up against the plaster. We had broken musical instruments and an out-of-tune piano. Sometimes you'd walk into the big room because you heard music and no one would be there. We had artists and philosophers and gardeners and people just trying to make their way. And we had witches. They were just like anyone else around, really. Except that sometimes they'd be talking to no one out in the garden or down by the creek or howling at the full moon. Sometimes I joined them doing that. They threw the best parties. Nadia took another swig from the bottle. Two buck chuck, naturally. You believe in ghosts, Anne? I looked at her for a long time. Probably too long. She looked a little nervous. That happens to folks when I look at them, I guess. Finally, I made up my mind. I'm not sure. She sighed and handed me the bottle. Her watch caught the late afternoon light. I've seen some around here. I lit up another cigarette and offered her one. She declined and reached into her bag to roll her own. You ever walk down to the cemetery? She gestured in its general direction. I did. I had to walk through it to get to school, had to walk through it to get to work. Sometimes I'd just stay there for hours. Still don't know why. It was comfortable, I guess. Well, I think sometimes the ghosts down there get tired of walking around there and come for a visit. Just the other day, I was thinking to myself how nice it'd be to have a cozy sweater so I could curl up at night and look at the stars. The next day, there was one at my door. Nadia lived on the second floor with most of the others. I told her I'd had a similar experience with my favorite leather jacket last winter, just when I needed it most. It showed up. That's not ghosts. That's just the house looking out for us. Willow appeared, like they usually did. Long, tangled hair hiding their eyes. They'd been here longer than any of us, living up in the treehouse out back. I think they'd lost track of how long. They stretched out and sat. The house provides, man. Ask, and you shall receive. They held out their open palm. I gave them a cigarette. Lighting it, they said, "The ghosts here ain't that friendly." Nadia and I exchanged a look.
I'm serious, man. Just ask Eddie the Greek. He almost died because of a ghost.
Wish he died, I muttered. Our landlord hired Eddie the Greek to fix up the place from time to time. Mostly he just leered at the fresh meat, sang songs off-key, and argued with his ex-wife on the phone. Nadia's eyes went wide.
Don't put that shit out into the universe, Anne! It might happen!
I shrugged and went back into my cave. I was the only one on the ground floor who lived inside. Everyone else down here had a courtyard room out back. Must have been about 15 of us at the Yellow House, give or take. Not counting the witches down the way. Or the screamer in the attic. He didn't come down much, though. My cave didn't get a lot of natural light. I'd painted the room a dark blue to complement the orange tiles. The best part about it, though, was the bookshelf. 12 feet long, 5 feet high, and built directly into the wall. It almost had enough room for all my books. I plucked an old favorite off the shelf and nestled into my moldy old leather reading chair. Some people read Harry Potter or old fairy tales or the Bible for comfort. I read passages from the secondhand copy of the Necromicon I'd had forever. I'd found it at an old bookstore that's not around anymore when I was in high school. Performed a few small protection rituals here and there, but nothing major. Who'd ever had it before me had written in big, blue, block letters, "This book binds you to the Elder Gods or the Ancient Ones. Beware! Do spells at your own risk!" Page 101. Some sort of summoning ritual. At the bottom of the same page, in green ink, someone else had written, "Risk is worth it, belief is key, intention important." The cursive was messy and thin, like spiders attacking each other. I found myself staring at that page a lot back then. I must have been staring at it for a while because the knock at my door made me jump. It was Trent. He wanted to kick my ass at chess again. Trent only came out at night. I blew out the incense I hadn't realized I'd lit and joined him in the kitchen. Trent talked about math like other people talked about poetry or religion. Setting up the pieces, he started off on a tangent I couldn't quite follow. Quantum cubes and the fourth dimension. Trent had had my room before I'd moved in, and the equations he'd scratched into the walls were still visible under the paint. I bought a poster with sayings by the Dalai Lama to cover them up. I was 19. Nate and Trent usually played chess around this time of night, and Nate could usually keep up. But Nate had gone surfing last week and hadn't come back, so here I was. String theory and advanced calculus and getting my ass kicked at chess. One of the pawns on my side had been replaced with a spent bullet. Trent had my king in 9 moves. And the raccoon that had snuck in through the sliding glass door sat to watch our rematch. "Better than usual, dude." Trent could be painfully positive. He had my king in 5 moves. I decided to make some tea and sit out on the porch. It was still warm out this February evening, and I listened for the coyotes and crickets to start their symphony. The stars above always seemed to swirl if you stared at them too long. They danced to remind us how little it all meant and how little we all knew. I felt a hot wind on my face, but the wind chimes above me didn't move. Marie was dancing down the long dirt path that led to the coven's place in the old barn. She was beautiful in her baggy black hoodie, ragged skirt, and wild brown hair. The fire behind her eyes never went out, and you could make out its light even on a moonless night like that one. She danced slowly, waving her arms like a tree in a light breeze. She disappeared from view for a second, then danced back, doubled over, still flailing. She began to sing, guttural and low. One long, slow note. One impossibly long, slow moan. She stood up sharply and turned to face me. Her eyes met mine. She smiled, crooked and wild, and looked past me. Then she sprinted back up the path toward the barn. I lit a cigarette. One of the house cats, a cream calico named Persephone, came up and rubbed against me. Our landlord had gotten about 9 or 10 of them in response to the rat problem. She dropped a dead rat at my feet and purred, kneading her bloody paws against my jeans. I scratched her behind the ears and she purred louder. Eventually, Persephone fell asleep, and I rested up against the house, closed my eyes, heard the whispers again. After you live at the Yellow House for a while, you start to dream about it. You see it in all your dreams, looming over you from on top of a hill, or swallowing you up in a labyrinth of almost familiar hallways. Nadia had told me that when I'd gotten there. I didn't believe her then, but now it's the only thing I really believe. I dreamt that night that I was in the creek, waist deep and naked. I felt no cold or pain, just the comfort of the house watching over me as I became the creek. My body melted into the water and we were one. I felt horror and pleasure because I knew I was safe and I knew the house wanted me. I woke up in my own bed the next morning. It was really a mattress on the ground, but it got the job done, especially when I had guests. I wiped the blood from my nose and went to make myself a cup of coffee. Sipping my coffee, I sorted through the mail. My ex-girlfriend had sent me a letter saying she was worried. Anne, so worried about you, Anne. I burned it and changed into a beat-up Screaming Females t-shirt I'd gotten when they played the rickshaw stop. Felt longer ago than I knew it was. I wore the same jeans. They covered the scars. It was 85 degrees that morning, and it was only 11 a.m. I shivered. On the porch, Willow was doing yoga, barefoot and sweating. I tried not to stare for too long. They made my eyes hurt when I stared too long. Sipped my coffee and lit another clove, put my sandy hair up and sat down. You all right, Annie? You look a little, tired? Willow went into child's pose as they spoke. I'm fine. You ever try yoga? It's real good for you. Nah, I'm good. Thanks, though. Cool. They lay on the ground like that for 20 minutes or so. I left. The water at the Yellow House was clear and cool when it came out of the tap. I could never quite get over the taste, though. Like rotting meat and rusty pipes. I splashed some on my face and looked at myself in the mirror, all cheekbones and freckles. The dark circles under my eyes had always been there. They'd always been there. I know they'd always been there. And I wasn't tired. A walk in the woods was all I needed. Commune with nature. The acreage behind the house was wild except for a footpath. I started the climb. One of the house cats joined me about halfway up the hill. He was orange, with a tail like a question mark. He trotted along beside me until we came to the greenhouse. The greenhouse was abandoned, sitting up there, overgrown with weeds and blackberries. The original owner of the house was buried next to it. You could see the tombstone peeking out from behind the tall grass. You could see stains on the inside of the glass. You could hear things inside. The orange cat hissed and ran. I kept walking until I found the faces carved in the rocks. Willow had shown them to me when I'd first moved in. About a quarter mile from the house, further back on the property, someone had carved 8 faces in 8 large boulders and placed them in a circle. I sat on the biggest one and took off my top. I wanted the sun to bake me alive. I wanted to burn more than anything. I don't remember when I started crying. I went back to my cave when the sun started to sink, curled up with a book until the power went out. I must have dozed off, but I didn't dream. My window creaked open. It was nearer to the ceiling than a window should have been. Someone was staring at me. I tried to shout at the shadowy figure, but I couldn't. I couldn't move. There, in my mattress. The shadow reached its long arm into my room, then its other arm. It slowly pulled itself in through my window, never taking its gaze off me. The lamp flickered back on. The shadow remained, climbing down my wall and over my writing desk. It crept onto the floor and stood in the middle of the room. The heat was unbearable. I started to blister. It took a step toward me, towering over me as I tried to scream. It tilted its head and opened its mouth. Its jaw stretched and stretched and stretched. Ask, and you shall receive. My stay at the hospital was fine. Quiet. They asked where the burns and cuts had come from, and I said, me. And they changed my medication. I moved away from the yellow house in spring. I can't even find it anymore. But the yellow house still watches over me in my dreams. And it loves me.
I said. take you in. The times I swore I'd hear you out again. I'm in your arms, and I'm stuck inside that safety that will set off the alarm.
The Ugly Radio is a production of Ugly Radio Presents and is a part of the Pod Moth Network. Tonight's episode was produced by Andrew Shanks. Tonight's episode was I'm Coming Home. Tonight's stories were Rats and Roaches by Kellyne Conway Blanchard, performed by Chad Somerville, Alexandria Stevens, Maddie Nibble, and Liam White. Featuring Another Home and The Path is Always the Same by Claudio. Life in the Yellow House by A.V. Eichenbaum. Performed by Sarah Rose Nottingham, featuring Dining Room by This Will Destroy You, and As We Carry On, They Exist by Claudio. Music guest tonight was Kate Dinsmore with Giving You Up and What's the Point. More music can be found on Apple Music, Spotify, and katedinsmoremusic.com. Title song provided by Unknown Citizen. To support The Ugly Radio, join our Patreon at patreon.com/theuglyradio. You can also contact us at theuglyradio@gmail.com. The Ugly Radio is a proud member of the Pod Moth Network. Pod Moth is a tirelessly curated collection of weird, odd, and macabre podcasts. Give them a listen today. Thank you for listening. Happy New Year. And we'll see you in the void.
Hey, podcast lovers. My name is Haley, and I run the Doe Identify podcast. I have been passionate about helping the unidentified get their names back ever since I found out I lived within miles of where Sherry Ann Jarvis, formerly known as the Walker County Jane Doe, was found. In my podcast, I tell the stories and provide information about unidentified people in hopes of reaching their loved ones and getting their names back. So come join me and help me advocate for these people. You never know, you could recognize someone's story.
Hey, what's up, you guys? I'm Catherine.
And I'm Haley.
And we are Saturdays Are for the Ghouls,
a podcast on the Pod Moth Network.
We cover all things spooky, like horror movies, true crime, the supernatural, and spooky stories.
In the most chaotic way possible.
So join your favorite ghoul friends every Saturday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And become a spooky babe.
So spooky babes, we'll see you in your nightmares.